Monday Night on the Fan pregame gang is all back together. Motor City Forzy back. That's what Mike called me. I don't like it.
No.
Motor City
Glad
Forzy.
Glad you led with that.
Motor City. We are back. Detroit was great. It was fun. Great PWHL action on Saturday night. We got Monday Night Hockey tonight, though, after us. A late start, 8:30 p.m. puck drop between Calgary and Washington, plus GM meetings are underway in Florida. We're going to have Merrick Bundy on in just a few minutes.
We haven't had a show in a few days, which means we're closer to opening day than we were last time. 10 days until the first pitch flies between the Blue Jays and Rays. 3.5 weeks until the Rogers Centre reopens once again. We'll have one of our favorites back in a half hour, Caleb Joseph on Joey Votto, Danny Jansen, and everything Blue Jays.
March Madness brackets this week, so get crafting, get selecting. I'm not good at it, but I'm going to do my best. We also have the hottest team in professional sports in the city of Toronto. We'll get to that a little later.
Best bets later in the show, and maybe we'll squeeze in some Scottie Scheffler talk after his title defense at the Players.
Before we bring in Jeff, we're going to talk about GM meetings, obviously. We're going to talk about the more important things that the folks in Florida are talking about. But an interesting nugget that came out today is that the league has signed on to do a behind-the-scenes series with Amazon that will center around 10 to 12 star players due for a fall 2024 release. So probably already being produced or starting now, or maybe we've just not been in the know. But 10 to 12 players, star players, is how it's been teased. Who is your top 2, 3, 4 players you must see a behind-the-scenes look at?
See, this is a little confusing, right? Because we're just hearing about this now. There's not much time left in the regular season. I guess it could be a playoff thing, but whatever. Like, I'm interested in it. I'm into it. For sure it's going to be interesting nonetheless. As it goes to who I want to see, like, I feel like I need to know if Nathan MacKinnon is actually as much of a maniac as he's been billed to
be. I want to see his food.
Like, especially in the playoff time, right? Like, because Nathan MacKinnon's probably winning himself a Hart Trophy this year. Top of his game this season. This team is loaded, ready to go, Colorado Avalanche. And if we get that playoff Nate sort of vibe, then we might learn more than just, like, the theory around Nathan MacKinnon and what he's all about. So Nathan MacKinnon, top of my list. Maybe I'll just stay Cole Harbour and go Sidney Crosby as well.
Well, of course.
But Nathan MacKinnon's my number one. What about you?
Yeah, Crosby's got to be one, specifically with this season, the way it's been disappointing. It might be the first time in his, like, career that their team is selling. We might not, we won't see a playoff Crosby. So how does that fare with him? All the talk about what's next for that franchise. I think Crosby's a really good one. I mean, I would think that the market would say Matthews if you're the people that are making the NHL click worthy, but I want to see Willie. I want to see Willie behind the scenes. We got a tease of it when they're on their international trip over in Sweden. We saw the life that Willie lives. I think he'd want to do it. I think he'd want his stardom to increase. I think he'd be really entertaining. I'd love to see behind the scenes if I had to pick one leaf with Willie. And then, of course, Bedard. Want to see how this season went. Want to see with the broken jaw coming back from it, Bedard mania. I think those are some shoe-ins for sure. We will open up our text line at 590-590 if you want to send in your must-sees. If there's 10 to 12 players that the NHL is going to follow, who's got to be on that list?
Willie checks off a few key boxes. The stardom aspect, obviously, is one of them. But I think one key is that you have to be, like, comfortable with extra attention.
He's gonna love it.
And that's something hockey players don't normally love, right? That extra little layer, because you get ribbed all the time. And it's just a little extra that most hockey players aren't necessarily into. I think Willie would be into it. I think a guy like Jack Hughes would be pretty good as well.
You should just have all the Hughes brothers have an episode.
The Hughes makes sense. The brothers Hughes make sense for this documentary.
Okay, for sure. We're going to take more. We'll take your thoughts at 590-590. Tweet us or send us a message. Who should be on this pretty big thing that the league is hopefully going to get out around the fall. But let's bring in Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts podcast. Rocking his beautiful PWHL sweater. Jeff, happy Merrick Monday. How's it going? Oh, there he is.
Good. I wanted to make you feel comfortable. I know you're just coming back from Detroit, PWHL action, a great game in Pittsburgh as well. Toronto on top of the entire outfits, tied with Minnesota, although they have the one game in hand. So I just wanted to make you feel comfortable, put on some purple PWHL gear for you. Ailish, Justin, yes. How are you? By the way, there's a couple, and I'll preempt your first question. There's a few, just hearing you guys riff on this. And Justin, I'm with you on Jack Hughes. I would throw all the Hughes brothers into that mix. Also, I would throw the Kachucks in, so maybe you do like a full sibling thing. I would want either Artemi Panarin or Nikita Kucherov in that as well. Two of the more interesting players around the NHL. Jacob Trouba, I would throw in there just to see him do his art, to do his painting, which he got into over the in the off season. But the one guy that I'll come back to, and maybe this is just because this is the place in my life where I'm at, and it sort of fits me biographically, or autobiographically rather, Jacob Slavin of the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, it's not going to be the, you know, party on, wild time, Hughes Brothers kind of thing, but I've always had a soft spot for Jacob Slavin. Has an adopted daughter. I was adopted. I have an adopted daughter. A couple of years ago, when we were in Chicago, we were all exchanging pictures and all that, and so that holds a special place in my heart. So I will go Jacob Slavin because I'm an old adopted kid. How about that?
And if we're doing contrast, I think his defense partner in Carolina, Brent Burns, definitely would be really interesting because those two are polar opposites.
That's
and of course,
idea.
They're playing well together. Oh, and that'd be an easy list for
the
broadcast.
I want to see what's in his backpack.
We can finally unpack the backpack with Brent Burns.
Yes. That's a, you know what? That is a great one, too. There's a real odd couple vibe about that. Jacob Slavin and Brent Burns both together. That would be wild. What's at the ranch with Brent Burns? And then you have like the wholesome family of the Slavins.
Yeah.
And then in comes Brent Wildman Burns, caveman style. I like that, Justin. That's good. I dig that one.
Okay. There's also some coaches that could have their own docuseries, but we'll get into that another time. GM meeting's underway. What's actually some important information that we need other than Amazon documentary series?
That's an interesting one too. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I was talking to Doug Armstrong. He's part of the executive committee, general manager of the St. Louis Blues as well. Had him on the radio show today. And I kind of said, you know, how, you know, doesn't seem to be like one big burning issue or one real big hot button issue this time around for the general managers to chew on. Normally the first day is just go over a couple of rules, tweaks, ideas that you might want to talk about. It seems like, and hold on to your hats here, folks, the one that's gaining the most traction or has the most interest is video review for puck over glass. I know it's not the most exciting. I know it's not the sexiest. But it seems like puck over glass seems to be getting most of the headlines today. By the way, as an aside, you know what it really bugs me? Or I find, maybe it doesn't bug me, because it doesn't bother me as much as I find it hilarious when we're talking about puck over glass. Does anybody else find it really bizarre when the puck goes over the glass, the guys all point?
As where instinct.
The puck went over, it's like, yeah, thanks. Like, we know.
Just in case nobody saw it in the arena.
Everybody does it. Like, I would go as far as saying this to Elliot this afternoon on the show. I would go as far as if the general managers want to bring this up as a point of conversation, if you want to talk about puck over glass and video review, I'm in support of a 2-minute minor for anyone who points at the puck. You point and make yourself look ridiculous, that's a 2-minute minor for being ridiculous at that point. Who's with me here? Justin, you with me? English, are you with me? I know you're a player.
No,
so
I'm pointing at the puck,
but
for
anyone,
sure.
Yeah. Anyone who points at the puck, automatic 2-minute
minor. In the CFL a couple years ago, didn't they have a penalty for motioning for the flag for receivers and defensive backs that were motioning for pass interference?
Oh, did they?
I feel like that was a thing that maybe didn't last very long, maybe not through COVID, but hard to penalize on motions, I think. And maybe that's something, maybe a path we don't want to go down. Although I will say, I've never been more convinced that this is just an excuse to go to Florida, because if we're just doing the same things over and over again in terms of discussion, like puck over glass review, like it's just not a novel concept at all, is it? Like, I don't know. This just doesn't seem like that should be.
I know.
Number one in
billing. What are the sensitivities that they do have, though? Like like there's the pros and cons to it. Obviously, one of the cons is they don't want more whistles in the game, and I can agree with that. Like, I think we have enough whistles as it stands right now. But you know, I'll tell you something, and I know, like, here I am wearing a PWHL hoodie, but you know, I really thought that this would be a time that at least the managers would chew on something like the jailbreak idea. Even if you're not going to adopt it, at least have the conversation, because it's all like I think it's 8 managers per breakout group. I think there's 4 groups. Even just as something to chew on. You know, the idea of automatically, you know, you score a shorthanded goal and the player gets released, even just to have the conversation, because now there is a professional league that is doing this. Like, this is one of the things that I like about the PWHL. This used to be what the American Hockey League used to do, not like experiment with like the goofiest ideas where it doesn't even resemble hockey. It's just like, hey, it's a neat idea, let's try it. But things that, you know, can kind of move the game forward, you know, try to reflect the appetites of the modern sports fan. And the PWHL is doing it with either the way they're doing their first round in the playoffs, where you choose your opponent, or on the ice, where you score a shorthanded goal, the player gets released from the box, and it is an actual penalty kill. I thought maybe someone would bring that up this time around, considering we're seeing it on a consistent basis now in the PWHL.
It definitely feels like that's something worth discussing, something new, something that could actually bring, you know, material change other than, you know, more
Like the pitch clock review. Last year, like the MLB changed everything, and it was a smashing success, but it was a bit of a controversy at first, and then, look, it honestly made the game so much more watchable.
Merrick, on the topic of general managers going to Florida, how much longer do you think Steve Yzerman is going to be going to Florida? The Red Wings are definitely top of mind for me right now in terms of storylines within the NHL that's, you know, beyond what's being said in a boardroom. Huge fall from grace from them. It's been 5 years now, maybe, since the Red Wings got Steve Yzerman and missed the playoffs. If they can't rescue this, like, when do we start asking that question about him and the job that he's doing there?
Well, the one thing that I was told as well about Yzerman, and I put this in my notes on the weekend, is that, you know, there were a lot of teams that that tried to get a lot of his prospects, just to be blunt. And a lot of those players are playing in Grand Rapids. And the one thing that Yzerman has been very protective about, as much as he likes to, you know, do all of his shopping in the off season, that's probably another trend that's going to continue this off season, depending on wherever the Detroit Red Wings end up in the standings or maybe even the playoffs. You know, the one thing he's protective about is he's not letting go of any of these players. Some may have been, you know, may take a little bit longer to get to the NHL now. And I think we're all thinking of, and I think you're probably, you know, Justin, thinking about Simon Edvinson and like, okay, here, like, it's time to have a lengthy run in the National Hockey League, but he's not letting go of any of them. Like, I still, as much as he's looking for, you know, to fill his shopping cart in the offseason, he still has the long view of this Detroit Red Wings team and what they're going to look like, which kind of gets, you know, torn from the pages of Ken Holland's Detroit Red Wings, which, and I always kind of felt, I don't know, not that the saying was kind of fraudulent, but I always sort of looked at it skeptically, and that was, you know, the Detroit Red Wings like to over-ripen their prospects in Grand Rapids, to which I would always say, like, you have a murderer's row, and you have, like, Hall of Famers up and down the Detroit Red Wings lineup. Like, how is Valtteri Filppula and Yuri Hudler going to crack that lineup? They're in Grand Rapids because they can't knock anyone out of the box with the Detroit Red Wings. But as far as the stereotype of what Detroit does, you know, Yzerman is very much following it, and he's leaving those players in Grand Rapids. Now, I know what you're saying because, you know, it wasn't that long ago where the Detroit Red Wings had a nice little winning streak together. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were tucked into a playoff position. We thought that Yzerman was going to add probably one forward, maybe one defenseman at trade deadline. There was some interest in Jake Guentzel of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but it came pretty obvious that, you know, Steve Yzerman didn't want to pay the prices it was going to take. And when you look at the prospect haul that Pittsburgh got, you understand why the Yzerman wasn't going to pay the prices that were out there. But, you know, it seemed as if they were right there again, much like last year. And then they lost those two games to Ottawa, and Yzerman said, that's it. Towels in. Tyler Bertuzzi, you're off to Boston. It's not going to be there for us. Now, Detroit still might be in this thing. Like, Detroit's not totally out. Like, Detroit may end up grabbing that second wild card spot. Right now, it does seem that Washington, like, with a win tonight, win against Calgary, Washington leapfrogs them into that second wild card position. So I'm not saying Detroit's totally out of this one. I know it feels that way, Justin, because it feels like that to me too. But Detroit still has a shot at this thing. I just really did, it's a long-winded answer, I really did think they were going to at least add one defenseman who could defend into that lineup, and Yzerman didn't want to pay the price to get there.
We've got that game, Washington and Calgary, on Monday Night Hockey at 8:30 p.m., so a little bit of a later start. I want to ask you about Doug Armstrong, because you had him on your show today, and being a big spot to be added or to be named as the GM of Team Canada for a really important Olympic run. I mean, the return to the Olympics is going to be very important. Canadians actually not the favorites at this Olympics, so why is he the right choice to help Canada get a gold medal?
Well, I mean, they wanted to give it to him before. Well, they did give it to him before for the last Olympics. Before that one was scrubbed. But I mean, this has been a sort of, you know, he's been one of those managers whose worked with Hockey Canada for a number of years and worked at the Olympic level for a number of years. So it was sort of a matter of time before Doug got his own ship to steer. And, you know, one of the things that I found kind of interesting when we spoke this afternoon was, you know, I asked him about, you know, his philosophy of team building. And for the longest time, Hockey Canada always followed the rule of you build it like an NHL team, and your first line did this, and your second line did that, and your third line was this, and your fourth line was that, and first pair, second pair, third pair, D, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you built it like an NHL team, and that only took Team Canada so far. And then all of a sudden, they weren't piling up gold medals, and everything changed. And we saw this in Sochi, where the philosophy moved from NHL-style roster building to the simple philosophy of skill adapts. And you just fill your team with the most skilled players, and you assume that those skilled players, even though they might be playing out of position, can adapt, and that's what skilled players do. And I said, well, which way are you leaning? And I firmly believe that he was going to answer skill adapts, the Hockey Canada motto. And he said kind of a combination of both. So I am really curious to see what type of team Doug Armstrong puts together, if it's not just that blatant skill adapts. And, you know, how many times have we looked at Team Canada in the last 15 years and said, look at the forwards. They're all centers. I think there will be a sort of healthy mix of that, too. But it sounds as if he might, in the back of his mind as well, you know, bring in a couple of surprises that maybe we wouldn't see. Like, I'll tell you what, you know, the last time around for the Olympics, and of course that the NHL participation got scrubbed because of COVID, you know, there was a real good shot that Tom Wilson was going to be on Team Canada. So it wouldn't surprise me if we get like something like that from Doug Armstrong that doesn't necessarily fit this new Hockey Canada motto, but it's sort of a wink at the older way to build the roster. Thought that was interesting.
We're chatting with Jeff Merrick, head of Monday Night Hockey. News today was what Wayne Simmonds is going to announce his retirement, or announce it.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a one-day contract with the Philadelphia Flyers later in April. Obviously played some games with the Maple Leafs. But when you look at Wayne Simmonds' career, how will you both remember Wayne Simmonds?
Boy, I'll remember Wayne Simmonds as someone that earned every inch of ice that he played on. I'll think of Wayne Simmonds as someone who was fearless and would stand in front, not just stand in front of the net, but had a great ability to tip pucks. And with all due respect to the Joe Pavelskis and the Anders Lees and the Ryan Smiths, he may have been the best at it. And I think a lot of it is not just hand-eye coordination, but being fearless. And he was tough. And a lot of teams tried to get him because of all that. Like the Edmonton Oilers tried for a long time to trade for Wayne Simmonds. I had Claude Julien on the program today, and he said when he was in Montreal, they tried to bring him in before the Maple Leafs ended up signing him. So I'm sure there were plenty of other teams that brought him in. And the other thing, and this is a lesson to younger hockey players out there, he went through two OHL drafts, not drafted, before Mike Fuda drafted him with the Owen Sound Attack in the sixth round, maybe seventh round of the OHL draft. Like, here's a guy that kept coming back, wouldn't take no for an answer. One door closes, go back and work and go back and knock on that door. I got all the time for Wayne Simmonds. He was always a great interview as well, always entertaining. He was a media favorite. I can see him working in player development somewhere. I mean, there was, you know, some talk of him maybe working with the Pittsburgh Penguins organization. We know Kyle Dubas and Jason Spezza have a lot of time for Wayne Simmonds. Maybe he ends up working player development with the Philadelphia Flyers. I don't think that should surprise anybody, but I've got a lot of time for Wayne Simmonds. I loved guys that played the game the way that Wayne Simmonds did. And guys were scared to play against him. He was a nasty bit of business. I have all day for Wayne Simmonds.
There were unicorn qualities about Wayne Simmonds in his prime. Like there were few power forwards like him, but he was maybe the scariest of the power forwards in a lot of ways, which definitely separated him when he was at the peak of his powers. We touched on a little bit Monday Night Hockey tonight with Washington visiting Calgary. 8:30 start. I want to ask you about the more interesting team, at least in terms of playoff races, and that's Washington. And Spencer Carberry, obviously, first-year head coach, came from Toronto. It feels like he's one of the guys doing a little bit more with less, and that's kind of strange to say about the Capitals, but they've had a bit of a talent exodus. So, like, should he earn real high marks for his first-year job here, keeping this team together, keeping them in the race, or is this sort of a product of a pretty weak Eastern Conference when you get past the top six, seven, eight teams?
It's a great question, and I think there's a couple of low-key, you know, minor key candidates for the Jack Adams this year. One is Andrew Brunette for what he's been doing with the Nashville Predators, and I think the other is Spencer Carberry for what he's doing with the Washington Capitals. And I will tell you something. If he can get the Washington Capitals into the playoffs, and by the way, that dash 30 for goal differential, like, you don't make the playoffs when you're a dash 30, but there it is. There's the Washington Capitals. I mean, the one thing that Carberry's been able to do, and I don't think we ever thought we would see this with a Washington Capitals team, but here it is. As all around the NHL, like, every single night we see 8-5 games or 6-1 games or, you know, 7-5 games. Like, it seems if every night, like, goal scoring up, 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 accent on goal scoring. What's Washington doing? They're winning 2-1 games. They're winning really close games. Like, Spencer Carberry has his team, and I know Barry Trotz did some of this before him as well, but Spencer Carberry has his team playing a really sound, defensive, structured game. And that's with Ovechkin still getting his goals. So the other thing we have to mention with Washington, and if he can get them into the playoffs, what makes it even more profound is if you look at the remainder of Washington's schedule and measure it up against every other team in the NHL, okay, every other team, when you look at the quality of opponent that they're facing, they have the toughest road in the league. Have a look. It is murderer's row of teams from here until April when the season ends. If, and it's a big if Carberry can get the Washington Capitals into the playoffs after Brian McClellan, the general manager, threw in the towel a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday afternoon press conference and said, this is all about the kids and all about the future, and then moved bodies out. Max Pacioretty was this far away from being moved as well until he said, no, I'm going to stay. This is really a major accomplishment for a first-year head coach. Absolutely.
Let's see what they can do down the stretch. They got a big one tonight against the Calgary Flames. Jeff, we took a lot of your time. We appreciate you coming on Merrick Monday, and we'll chat with you next week.
No problem.
That's Jeff Merrick of The Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Quick shout out. Can I do one?
Of course.
Well, two. I'm going to get greedy. Two shout outs.
I don't know about two.
One to PWHL Toronto, who right now have the longest winning streak in North American pro sports. They are 10 wins in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Looked it up. Couldn't find a North American professional sports team with a longer streak. There's some college.
I think that checks out.
There's some college teams with some long streaks, but they are killing it. They were horrible to start this season, and they are unbelievable. A big win yesterday against Montreal. Montreal can't beat them. So shout out to the hottest team in North American pro sports. And then secondary shout out is to UNB Reds. Perfect season. This is U Sports men's hockey. A combined exhibition, regular, and postseason record of 43-0 this year.
That is ridiculous.
But then going back to last year, they're really 47-0 from their playoff run to the national championship. Unbelievable what's going on there. And the games are here at Mattamy, so I didn't get a chance to see them. But, like, that's dynasty stuff. More than
that is.
So, shout-outs to some red-hot teams.
You mentioned something in the interview there with Merrick. Not the favorites, Canada, Olympics?
I
was going to ask you, there are odds for this?
I saw some mumblings. I didn't see the mumblings of the actual numbers, but I saw that this was a discussion down at GM's meeting asking about how they felt about
not like
being
a betting
the favorites. No, well, I'll look for it. I know.
I hope people continue. Say this into, or speak this into existence so we can come on this show and with our best bets, absolutely hammer Canada to win the Olympic Games. There is no chance any other country should be the favorite coming into these Olympics. I'm sorry.
Maybe it was Canadian media talking to, you know, Doug Armstrong about it.
Which they love to do.
Trying to give you guys can be the underdogs.
In my experience being in NHL dressing rooms, reporters love to go up to an American star and say, well, you guys are the favorites next time around. Your team looking really good.
It's like a false positivity. Like,
I don't know if it's that or they're just trying to butter it up, get some good quotes. But reporters love saying that to U.S. stars.
Well, I saw it already starting today. That's why I asked Merrick. Quickly, we're going to do some best bets for tonight. I am going with something real fun. Kyle Lowry. We know him. We love him. He's playing for the Sixers now in his home team. And he's playing against the Heat tonight. And the Heat and the Sixers both dealing with some injury. Just don't get dramatic when you see that. Both dealing with some injuries. It's a Kyle Lowry double-double tonight. It's plus 2,000.
Stand by your pick. It's a good
pick. I'm confident that he's going to want to show off. It's the first time he's playing the Heat. He's in his hometown, as I said, not full rosters on both sides. Live a little. Plus 2,000. If anybody is the most competitive basketball player that's going to rise to the occasion, it's Kyle Lowry. So
I actually really love
for
the pick.
Yeah,
it's a bet on whether he's going to get 10 assists, I think. I mean, he doesn't double-digit score every night, but you're going to be taking
shots
against
your opponent. Sometimes you just have to, on a Monday, swing for the fences. Start your week off right.
I love it. I think it's a great pick. I'm going to pick the Capitals tonight in Calgary, plus 115. Maybe I should, given our conversation with Merrick, pair it with the under, given that they're winning all their games 2-1.
That's
smart. So maybe I'll do that. That'll be about plus 250, I think, if you did that. But yeah, Capitals are the team in the race right now. The Flames are not. So I'm going with the Washington Capitals and Spencer Carberry at plus money.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to talk baseball. Caleb Joseph is going to join us. We got Joey Votto home run in his first at-bat in spring training here at the Blue Jays and rolls his ankle. And then we've got Danny Jansen injured again. And a little look at the AL East. And we'll wrap up with a little bit of Scotty Scheffler talk. All that to come on the Fan Pregame.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame, SportsCenter, SportsNet 590, The Fan. It's 10 days until MLB opening day. Whew, that flew by. I remember we were having our first chats about spring training. So many opportunities, so many faces. And then we got a new one in Joey Votto, and that kind of became our story for the home stretch here. And he made sure to keep his name in the headlines on Sunday. He got his big home run and his first at-bat, first pitch. Like, it was storybook stuff until he rolled his ankle in the dugout.
Yeah, most storybooks don't have a rolled ankle on a bat in the dugout. But yeah, I was like overreaction Saturday with that, or Sunday with that.
You were?
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, we got to move Turner to third.
You weren't the only one I saw
Votto,
online.
We need Votto splitting duty with Vladdy. Like, we're a far better team because look at Joey Votto, and then rolled ankle in the dugout. But
all right.
I do feel, do you not feel? Even before the home run, you brought him here for a reason. He's going to be a part of their plans in some way. Like, I would be stunned if he wasn't, and that's not because he hit home run
the other day. I certainly feel like this isn't a move you make without a little bit of prediction that this guy would find a spot on your roster, right? I mean, it's good PR to have him there, but...
It's bad PR to let him go.
Yes. Yes and no. And I don't think the Blue Jays should be making massive roster decisions based on PR. They don't have that much of a
leash. No, but you
open
the door, so.
But you do open the door. And he got off to a pretty good start there. Obviously, he didn't get back in the game, and he's got a little bit of an injury now. So we'll see how long this one lasts. But, I mean, talking about debuts in a Blue Jays-esque jersey, not the real one, I thought it was pretty good. Let's ask Caleb Joseph, of course, our Blue Jays analyst, joining us. Caleb, how's it going?
Not too bad. How about you?
Oh, we're pretty good. How's Joey Votto doing in your eyes? Is he a lock? Is he on the bubble? Is it him and Vogelbach? How do we start to break this one down?
Yeah, interesting. I seem to believe, like you guys do, that they've brought him in for a reason. And I really feel like if he gets back to kind of doing some things that he did earlier on in the really productive phase of his career, he could do some damage and really help the Blue Jays lineup. They're looking for damage kind of in the middle of that order from the left-hand side, and a guy that can come in and give a really professional at-bat with a guy in scoring position. I think Votto for a long time was kind of the on-base king, right? The guy that could really watch a close pitch on the outer half and would take his walk. I think at this phase right now, they're looking for a guy that can come in and do damage, hit the ball over the fence. And he could absolutely do that if he wants to. And was down in spring training last week in Dunedin, got to see him take a couple rounds of BP live, and he looked very good. The swing was there. Loved the way he was using his lower half. And the way that it all kind of transpired, Votto being on the market for a long time and kind of putting himself out there saying, I want to play, I want a gig, I feel like there's probably an understanding between him and the Blue Jays that they need a certain caliber, a certain version of himself, or they're going to move in a different direction. So I would guess there's probably an understanding between both of them that at a certain point, if you feel like you can help us, then we'll figure it out. And now with the rolled ankle, some of that could be potentially in jeopardy. So we'll have to see how he recovers from that standpoint. But I do feel like at some point he, if he kind of is the version that they want him to be, he will have some significant plate appearances for the Blue Jays this year.
I can't decide if he's a question mark or a known quantity because, you know, he's 40 years old. Last two seasons were impacted by injury. And yet it seems like he's never really shown when he's getting the opportunity, when he's in lineups, when he's digging in, you kind of get the same thing from Joey Votto. Maybe not MVP Joey Votto, but still productive, still walks, still what you want from, as you mentioned, you know, middle of the order contribution, if that's what you need. Where do you stand on that? Like, is there some intrigue in what he is, or is this just Joey Votto and the issues are whether he can stay in the lineup and avoid slipping on bats and dugouts?
Yeah, I think there's intrigue. I think there is another spot in that lineup, even with Vogelbach being on the team. I think it's a bit of an insurance policy as well, depending on how he starts off this season. I do think Vogelbach makes the team, and I think that as he kind of progresses, Votto's a bit of an insurance policy for him. But I do think there's a ton of intrigue there. Think of Brandon Belt. Nobody really thought that Matt Belt, he's an aging player. He has his best days are behind him. And he comes in and he really provides some thump in the middle of that order. They really needed that kind of left-handed power. It allows them to kind of split up a couple of right-handers up at the top there. They can maneuver him up and down. Belt could even hit two if he wanted to because of his on-base capabilities. I see Votto being that type of guy, but I also see Votto being more of the run producer. And such a difficult thing to do in the big leagues is to drive in runs, and I really feel like that's the intrigue with signing him, is his ability to have a professional AB, even grind guys down to where he might have a single into the gap to score a guy at second base, or he might catch a hanging slider on the front for a homer.
Speaking of 40-year-olds or near 40-year-olds, how big of an ask would it be to say, hey, Justin Turner, we got to get some reps out of you from third base if we're going to fit all these new bats into the lineup? Like, is that impossible to put that on his plate at this point, or is that something that Justin Turner might be able to handle?
I wouldn't say impossible. I played with Justin Turner for a couple spring trainings in Baltimore, and he's just a gamer. He loves the game, loves baseball. I wouldn't say impossible, but I wouldn't really depend on it, if that makes any sense. I think it's more of in a pinch if the matchups are absolutely perfect and you really desperately want to get bat A, B, and C in the lineup. I think that's a spot where you can go to put him over there, but anything north of 20 games would be kind of pushing it for me, just because of what he does produce on a daily offensively. You'd hate for something to tweak up defensively that takes him out offensively, and you could essentially shift Vladdy into the DH spot, move Turner to first, and then if you did want to add a different bat in there somewhere. Again, it's a lot of pieces to the puzzle for this Blue Jays lineup right now. And that's the interesting part, is having this jigsaw puzzle just kind of fit perfectly and having every player on that offensive side playing to the best year of the back of their baseball card. That, to me, is just what's going to really be the telltale of this team, is can each player individually bring their best year and then combine it into one entire group effort for the 24 season. I'm going to be looking for that. But yeah, the combos of a Turner and possibly a Vogelbach and Votto, it does start to get a little bit tricky. It makes sense that that's the only way you can have that sort of combo. I think they could try it, but in terms of leaning on it and him being a 70 start guy over there, I would be hard pressed to put my chips on the table for that one.
You say interesting jigsaw puzzle. We'll throw in the one that Danny Jansen is on sideline for a little bit, a fractured bone in his wrist, but best possible news, John Schneider said. But he's injured again, and he's got a track record of being injured, you know, basically once a season. Is this, I know you've played, you've been a catcher, so I wonder if this is an anomaly. Is this is something that you just deal with as a catcher, or is Danny Jansen, like, maybe a little cursed?
Yeah, it's really too bad for Danny. You look at what he did the first year that he got into the league, really his first full season. I think he caught like somewhere north of 100 games and really produced. And the Blue Jays have to be thinking, wow, we have a frontline catcher here. And every year since, I think had the stat a couple of days ago, the most games he's started since that first full season was like 65. Mm-hmm. And if you look, he's gotten onto some stretches where when he's gotten that consistent playing time, when he hasn't been on the injured list, he's been one of their more damaging bats in the lineup. He has come through in the clutch. He'll get on a 2 or 3 week heater where he'll hit 8 or 9 home runs in a 2 or 3 week span and can really give a boost to the lineup. And that's just too bad that he consistently is finding injuries in the hand areas as well. It just seems like the ball finds his hand, whether it's left or right hand, whether it's offensively, whether it's a foul tip like he took last year on his throwing hand. This one's in the right kind of wrist area, hit by pitches on the left hand. It's just, it's a lot of bad luck, because what are you going to do? I mean, you're trying to get out of the way and the ball's thrown at you. You know, how else are you supposed to maneuver? Your body's moving in a very natural position towards the ball, especially with the high velocity these guys are throwing these days. You don't see guys really turning back the opposite way very much anymore, which would expose the back and the shoulder. You're seeing guys having to make a move towards the pitcher, which then exposes the hands and all these foul balls and block balls that are getting thumbs and fingers. And it's just too bad, because I really feel like if he was to get 100 starts behind the plate, he could really go into a prolonged sense of doing damage with the bat. And that's exactly what the Blue Jays need. They're going to need the tandem of Jansen and Kirk to really do what they did a couple of years ago when they were the best kind of 1-2 punch in baseball. They need that offense out of them. And obviously it can't happen if Jansen's on the IL.
How does that work against you psychologically? Like, not to say that you've been in the exact same position, but you played the catcher position, obviously, but if you're getting hit on the hands all the time or you're getting banged up, like, does it cause a tentativeness at all? Like, is it something that you have to work through and work on? Or do you just expect Danny Jansen, when healthy, to be back helping the Blue Jays offense?
Yeah. For some guys, they will start to kind of create game plans or moves around some of those injuries. I think about Giancarlo Stanton. And years ago, he took that fastball when he was in Miami literally to the face. And it really ruined his ability to kind of hang in there. That's when he started kind of going to the side stance. He's off the plate a little bit further. Any pitch that's in that kind of up and in area, it really gives him anxiety. And so he really, really tries to stay away from getting back into that area. I know Danny, play with Danny. Danny's just a hard-nosed type of player. He's not even thinking about it, and maybe that's to his detriment. Like, he's not changing anything he's doing. And because he's such a good pull hitter and is able to cover the outside part of the plate with the good part of the bat, a lot of teams are really going to try and throw him inside. If you can get him chasing on the inner half of the plate, that's might be where Jansen is possibly most exposed. So you're going to see a lot of pitches that especially they're going to try and run up and in. Well, that's right into the spot where as the hands start to move into the ball, that's where he's going to move. And that's why you're seeing multiple balls hit his hand, is because it's right inside that motion. If he was to change and become a little bit timid in there, sort of like Stanton, he might be able to dodge, but it's going to change his entire game plan. And so obviously I don't want him changing any part of his game plan, because that's what makes him who he is his ability to cover that outside half. It's just so unfortunate that over and over and over, for some reason, guys keep missing up and into him, and because he's looking to cover that outer half, his hands are just totally exposed.
And of course,
I just go for the guy. I really do. Yeah. It seems like it's over and over and over.
Oh yeah, hard not to sympathize with. I'm sure it's easier for you, Caleb Joseph, on the line, chatting the Blue Jays. The Jansen injury hasn't slowed down the Blue Jays, at least in terms of their run production here in Florida, leading in runs, leading in RBIs as well, up there in home runs. Is there any correlation from what you do offensively as a team in Grapefruit League to the start of the season? That might be a little bit wishful thinking, but some things did carry over, at least last season, looking at the likes of Yusei Kikuchi, and I know that's an isolated thing. But should this be something that encourages Blue Jays fans, that they're finding ways to score runs here right now?
Yep, especially with a guy like Dalton Varsho. That's something that really stands out to me. I had a manager one time tell me spring training is the biggest fooler of them all. And I think what he means by that is that there's guys like a Cam Eden that can come in and hit 750 in spring training. And I highly doubt that there would be Canadians running to the BetMGM or whatever it is to put, you know, $1,000 that Cam Eden's going to be the MVP of the season. I highly doubt that. But you could also have a veteran like a Joey Votto or even a George Springer that can be 1 for 50 in spring training. And because they are who they are, because they're working on something, because they have the track record, it could totally mean nothing. They could start the season off 15 for their first 20 and look like the best player to ever play the game. It's a huge teaser for so many different reasons. I do like what Varsho has been able to do. When you have a guy that has high expectations and is coming off of a bit of a down year, when they come into spring training and they produce and they do well in spring training, it is a good sign. That's what you really, really want. What you don't want to see is a player who you're expecting to come in following a tough season and kind of look the same, act the same, the ball comes off the bat the same, and you get the same results. That's when you start to think, oh no, is this player trending downward? That's when, as a fan, you start to worry a bit. But when you see guys coming off of tough years and they come into spring training very hot, a lot of that confidence with what the player was working on in the off season can flow right into the season, even though you might not be facing the same major league caliber arms day in, day out in spring training. That confidence for a player like that is going to pay big dividends.
Speaking of confidence, I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. probably relies on a lot of that and has struggled at times to find it. But the main dialogue that we've been having here in the media for the last little bit is because of the talk about the jacket and maybe wanting it to return and wanting to have fun and have this season, you know, also win games, but having fun were words that were put on headlines everywhere. I wonder for you why this is so polarizing, because there's a subset of this fan base that thinks, yeah, baseball is America's pastime. It should be fun. It's really, you want to enjoy, and you're a player, you want to enjoy playing sports. But another part of it says, well, Vladdy, you should be serious. Just worry about hitting home runs, or they should trade Vladdy because he wants to have fun. Like, why is this such a polarizing topic? And I guess, where do you stand on it as someone who's played in the big league and probably had fun and probably had games where you didn't have much fun?
Yeah. Oh, it's such an interesting topic. I feel like I played in this weird era of the old school and the new school, with no analytics, with kind of quote, no fun, to all analytics and all fun. Home run jackets, home run spears, all this stuff. And I'll tell you what, if you showed the pitcher up when I first got into the league, you might as well expect one, you know, in between the ribs for your next AB. But then in a matter of what seems like a year or two, it just flips. And now there is no rules anymore. So I totally understand both sides. I really do. I wish when I played, I would have been able to enjoy more homers, because I never hit them. They were random. It was like a defenseman. It was like a stay-at-home defenseman scoring goal. Like, yeah, like, give me a big celly. Like, it happens 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. But when I was playing in that era, I didn't even think twice about it. I never thought, man, I'm going to really celebrate this because it never happens, just because it's the way the game was played. And I just understand both sides, how this shouldn't be a big deal. But for the baseball purists, I do see how it kind of is a big deal. For me, if it gets Vladdy back to 2021 wearing a home run jacket, I'm all for it. It's totally fine. the only thing that kind of rubs me the wrong way sometimes is in a 10-1 game, when you're losing, getting absolutely thumped, it's been a long road trip. You're 2-7 on the road trip, and you've got the big home run jacket after a guy hits a solo homer in the eighth inning, and it's kind of like a lick at me type of thing. That's the only sideshow that I see, but I'll take that if Vladdy hits 35 homers in 20 winning games. So it really doesn't matter to me. I do see both sides. As a player, I would just kind of I'd be conflicted. I'd be right split in the middle. I would love to wear it, but hate to wear it at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
We learned something today. The intersection of analytics and fun is baseball in 2024. never thought I'd ever see those two things meet. Last one for you, Caleb. Interesting take from Chris Bassitt in a interview with Chris Rose. He was talking about teams encouraging players to throw harder, which in turn is causing injuries. Now, this is a guy who doesn't throw all that hard talking about it, but maybe he avoided all that pressure and just kind of learned how to pitch, and that's what's kept him in the league and made him a really good pitcher in this league. Like, I mean, you have experience, obviously, catching and seeing prospects and seeing the guidance that pitchers are getting at spring trainings and over the course of baseball seasons. Like, is this a big issue in baseball?
Yeah, I honestly believe it is. It's how guys are graded out. And one thing that I've learned is players are not dumb. They are going to figure out how they're paid, and then they're going to run towards that and try and be masters of that. They're talking about spin rate when it comes to pitchers. You're talking about velocity, vertical and horizontal break. You're talking about chasing these numbers. And back in the day, it used to be that guys were graded on their pitchability, which is what Chris Bassitt has, their ability to locate. The fact that you have a 95 or 97 mile an hour fastball in the tank is just extra after and if you can locate the baseball. Locating the baseball was priority number one. I think now the way the game has shifted, it is now about stuff, and we will figure out location. We want to throw your best stuff every single time. So what does that lead to? That leads to maxed out curveballs, maxed out sliders, absolutely maxed out fastballs. And teams are telling guys, look, if you can just get it in the zone, not necessarily in a certain part of that 9-square quadrant that a lot of the strike zones are broken up to, we just want it in the zone as hard and as fully ripped as you can throw it. That's what guys want these days in terms of stuff. So you have guys that are constantly maxed out, and so their level goes down in terms of energy and stability, and you're seeing guys blow out at a pretty consistent rate. And they guys have always had injuries in baseball. It's just a grueling season. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to say that there's more or less, but when guys are maxed out, I have found in my experiences with teams that I've played on that the guys that go to 8,000 RPMs, they don't last as long as guys that can push and pull and dial back and pitch and then come back and then have 95 in the sixth or seventh inning, or pitch at 93 and have 95 in certain spots. A guy like Chris Bassitt, he knows when he, you know, what points in the game he needs to really empty the tank. But everybody else, it seems like, comes in from pitch one emptying the tank. And so I when you have a guy that has all the stuff, the high spin, the high velocity, and can locate, you have a $100 million pitcher right there.
There's only a few of those. I know that Jeff Blair always says, just hurry up and get spring training over with. The only thing that can happen is bad stuff, injury. So we only got 10 more days. 10 more days till the real season begins. Caleb, we appreciate your time today. We'll be chatting lots as the season begins. So rest up and get ready for the long haul.
You got it. Let's do it.
Thanks, Caleb. Caleb Joseph of Sportsnet, of course, Blue Jays analyst with us. 10 days away from opening day in MLB, the Blue Jays will be taking on, I think it's a 4:10 p.m. game that day against the Tampa Bay Rays. And they're not starting with an easy schedule. Their schedule is grueling right away. But there's a couple injuries. Yankees obviously know Garrett Cole, so maybe they'll figure it out. But it's a bit of a hard start for
our Rays, Blue Jays. Astros, then Yankees all on the road. Then you come home to a ballpark that's reopening, as you mentioned, that they haven't really have any familiarity in. So it's tough, right? Yeah. It doesn't feel like they're going to be home for a while, at least off the bat. So, yeah, it's a tough start for the Jays, something they're going to have to weather.
Shout out to one of our morning show listeners who's followed us on our journey, Kyle from Paris, good old Paris, Ontario, Mary Maxim. He sent us a message. Harkening back to my first ever text line to Ailish and Justin. Rename the gardener the Vodobon.
That's very good.
I think we are onto something. Well, Kyle's onto something. City of Toronto.
Only if we could move quickly on the Vodobon.
Well, that's true. You can't move. You're actually in park. Yes. So we need the opposite of that. All right, fun one. We've got a big night tonight in NBA. We got Detroit, Boston, Atlanta, Lakers. That's all on Sportsnet 1. And then tonight, Monday Night Hockey, is Washington and Calgary. That's up at 8:30, a little later start time there. Obviously, we talked about it. Washington really working their way into this playoff race. There's a couple interesting ones down the stretch. That will be a big one for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about the Eastern Conference that Capitals in it, but they're in it. 57%.
Who cares about your goal differential?
Just it doesn't matter in the end.
Win games once in a while. All right, that's it for us on the Fan pregame. We'll be back tomorrow, and we've got a big week ahead. Lots to go through as a Stanley Cup playoffs around the corner.